This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio and on BBC Sounds. This is
The Stephen Nolan Show!
There are two big issues on the programme. Public transport and the abuse of rugby referees. In fact, sports referees in general. What's going on? Are we going to lose referees because they're getting so much abuse, sometimes from players, from coaches, and even fans like us? Have a listen to that. It is a must listen if you are interested in what's going on within sport and what's going on within public transport. The whole issue around the Boyne Bridge, the new Grand Central Station, and what's happening to the traders on Sandy Row. There's a lot to get into. We get into it all on The Nolan Show. Have a listen.
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Right, stand by. We're going to hear the very latest from Translink on a whole range of issues. The Boyne Bridge demolition. Why has work stopped? The chances of compensation for Sandy Row traders. The date for the completion of all of that work around Durham Street and Grand Central Station. An update on metro bus delays, cancellations. And we'll also ask about bus shelters. Good morning. Chris Conway, the Chief Executive of Translink, is on the line.
Good morning, Mark.
Where will we start? The Boyne Bridge, why did you go ahead and try to bring it down if you didn't have full planning permission to start?
Look, this is obviously a very complicated project with many phases of construction. We had provided the information necessary to for the condition to be discharged. However, when we started planning, asked us to pause the work so we could they could engage with us further on the planning conditions. And obviously, we've complied with that request. I think now what we hope is that request can be, that review can carry on as quickly as possible. I think it's in everyone's interest now that the dismantling of the bridge continues and that we get the road opened again and we get the public realm that will bring so many benefits to the area opened and we can engage with the community on that and with businesses as well. So I think that's where we are at the minute, Mark. We're hoping that this review will be will take place quickly and that we can get the bridge opened or the road opened, as quickly as possible.
What did you do wrong? Why have you been told to pause work, in your words?
Well, I DFI Planning have said that they wanted to engage with us further on the planning conditions and we've complied with that request. So that's where we are at this point, Mark. We haven't been advised of any enforcement action or anything like that. But the department obviously wanted to take more time to consider the planning conditions and we've agreed to comply with that request. I think what's important now is this is done quickly and that we continue the work as quickly as possible because I think it's in everyone's interest now that the road is opened for businesses and for the community. And I think that's what's really important at this point, that we work to satisfy that and make sure that the community and the business can get the road opened again.
The detail is important too. Trust me, I will return to the big picture. But what exactly are the planners saying you've done wrong?
No, the planners aren't saying we've done anything wrong. They just want to take time to review the conditions. They're very complex conditions. It's a complicated project with many different phases of construction. And they just want to take a little bit more time to review that. And we're hoping that will happen as quickly as possible so that we can continue the work and get the road opened again.
Is the condition that you are alleged to have breached the condition that you should have had a better traffic congestion mitigation plan in place?
So, Mark, I can't really go into the detail on that. That would be something for DFI Planning. We've supplied all the information that they've requested to us. And as I said, they're reviewing that and engaging with us on that. And we hope that will be complete as quickly as possible so that we can continue the work and get the road open for people.
Could we be talking days? Could we be talking by the end of this month, you believe you can send the teams back in to keep taking down the bridge?
Well, it is really a matter. We've had this conversation before, Mark, when it was out of our hands. It is really a matter for DFI planning, but we hope it will be done as quickly as possible. I think everyone is sensitive to the fact that, you know, we need the road opened again. And there are huge benefits to be got from the new public realm. And we want to get on with that so that everyone can benefit from that and the road can be opened again. What we'll be doing for our part is we'll be looking at, you know, there's been a delay maybe of about 6 weeks here. We'll be looking to see what we can do to absorb that delay into the project plan so that there's not undue issues for, you know, from what we originally announced. We'll also be looking to see what we can do to even reduce the timescales as well that we originally announced. So, look, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we get the road opened as soon as possible. And I think that's in everybody's interest at this point.
6 weeks, Chris, I didn't know that. So you were asked or told to cease construction or demolition or dismantling of the Boyne Bridge 6 weeks ago?
Yeah, well, it was around the early part of December, Mark.
So anyone who's ever had a bit of building work around their house, you know, the builders are on a meter, and when you say we don't need you for 6 weeks, they still might want paid. Is it costing you more money?
Well, that's, you know, we build all that into the plan in terms of any issues or any challenges that might come up. And so at the minute, that is all built into our plan. As I said, we will be working to absorb that into the timescales going forward. And that's what our commitment is, and particularly from a community perspective, to get the road open and to get this new public realm that should bring many benefits to them open as quickly as possible.
Chris, we're going to hear from some of our listeners who have been phoning in to us in recent days in a moment or two. But, I mean, there are two very distinct views about the Boyne Bridge. People on one side of the community regard it as very precious. A lot of other people couldn't really give a monkey's about the Boyne Bridge. They just want to know when Durham Street is going to be reopened and when all of that work around that crucial part of Belfast is going to be finished. I think you said to me once, by the end of this year, are you still on track for that or not?
The end of this year to have all of the public realm complete, Mark, is it?
Durham Street reopened, the new station, exactly what you want, new saltwater square there, and everything in place with no more roadworks.
Yeah, that's what we're planning to do, Mark. You know, obviously, you know, we need to, there'll always be issues and things that we need to deal with. But certainly, we are looking to, our original timescale for this was to have everything open within 12 months. And that's still what we're planning to do.
Okay,
but
Chris.
But one thing I would say, Mark, I mean, look, there obviously have been objections to the Boyne Bridge being dismantled, and that's nothing new. I mean, that was these issues were all heard and listened to at the time of the consultation process. And DFI Planning and Belfast City Council gave the scheme the full support because there are huge benefits by opening up the public realm, improve connectivity to Sandy Row, for example. The public realm will extend actually up into Sandy Row, and we hope that that will enable people to access Queen's Quarter, Belfast City Hospital through Sandy Row, bring that footfall and pedestrian link that's been lost for a long time back into Sandy Row. Obviously, accessibility improvements, good access to the station by pedestrians, cyclists, people with disabilities and reduced mobility. All of those things will be benefited by this new public realm. And I think what we really want to do now is get on with that, really bring those benefits to the community and to businesses and to get the road opened as quickly as we can.
Okay. I want you to listen to four of our listeners, if you have the time. We'll start with John Anderson. He actually came into the studio on Wednesday. He's from the Ulster Architectural Heritage Society. And he says, have a listen to this, there's actually no need to get rid of the bridge.
Translink have missold the need to demolish the bridge right from day one. There was no need to demolish the bridge. The bridge has got nothing to do with the station and the building of the station and the operation of the station.
Chris Conway.
So, I mean, there are. I've mentioned to you already a number of significant benefits in terms of connectivity. I've mentioned the accessibility benefits it brings as well. I mean, these issues were raised at the time of planning and through extensive consultation with lots of different groups and with DFI Planning and with Belfast City Council, it was agreed that actually the best scheme going forward was to to dismantle the bridge and put in new public realm. So that has issue to a certain extent has already been dealt with, you know, quite some time ago. There are operational constraints with the bridge remaining. You know, we want to access the front of the station by bus, for example, out onto Durham Street. You know, that's not going to be possible if the bridge is there. We also want to future-proof the site for future generations. So there are, you know, a low glider at the minute is showing, you know, phase two would come down Great Victoria Street. There's nothing to say in the future that couldn't be extended down Durham Street, and we want to provide for that future connectivity that may be looked at in the future. So, you know, all of those things are really important that we move forward now, and we recognise that this is going to bring huge benefits to the community in terms of connectivity, and it's going to bring huge benefits in terms of accessibility and future-proofing the site. And there are operational constraints, for example, as I just mentioned, the buses accessing the site, which need to be addressed.
I think I know the answer to this question, but for the record, the bridge is still definitely coming down.
Yeah, I mean, we have planning for that, and you know, that's the process we're underway at the minute, and we hope to complete that as soon as possible.
No TransLink U-turn, that'd be a good headline, no?
Well, it's to do with the planning application that we've already in and approved and that we're working towards. And as well as that, the huge benefits it's going to bring, Mark.
Okay. Edwin Putz was on the show yesterday. Have a listen to this. He says you need to help local traders.
Business in Sandy Row is being absolutely hammered as a result of TransLink's actions. And we will be pressing TransLink for compensation for these businesses, because it's purely and solely down to them that these businesses are struggling the way they are.
Chris?
So, I mean, look, the closure of Durham Street has been in the plan since 2019, and we've consulted very widely on that. And, you know, whenever any road scheme or public realm works is done, there's obviously an impact, and we consult with people on that. We're certainly not aware of any situation where that would lead to compensation, you know, in terms of road schemes, you know, right across Northern Ireland. However, I would say that Department for Communities are setting up a group to see how businesses can be supported during this phase, and also to benefit from significant benefits that the new station public realm will bring. And we've sort of agreed to be part of that group, and that group's in the process of being set up.
Well, that's a question for the Minister, Gordon Lyons. Maybe he's listening. He can phone in and tell us if he's going to do that, and how much he's prepared to give to the Sandy Road traders. To be absolutely clear, you're saying to them, you're not going to give them a penny.
What I'm saying, Mark, is DFC are setting up a group, and we're prepared to be part of that group to talk about what is the best way to support businesses both now and into the future. You know, public realm schemes are not new in Northern Ireland, and I suppose we're happy to engage with the various bodies about what's the best way to move forward.
I don't know if you heard my conversation with Janet. Janet didn't have a very good experience at Grand Central. I offered to take her back and buy her even a scone and a cup of coffee and a bun, but she said no, because she said she didn't have a good first experience at the new station. Have a listen to this.
It is a white elephant. Waste of money. I've used it once and I would never use it again. An absolute nightmare to get to the actual train station. Got there, big queue at the ticket machine. Nobody knew how to use them. There was nobody there to show the people. Eventually got my ticket, and then you have to put it through the barrier. Got to the train in the nick of time. I will never use that new station ever again.
Talk to Janet, Chris.
Look, well, we're very sorry that Janet hasn't had a good experience. Obviously, we set ourselves very high standards in terms of customer service. We have a lot of people and customer service people there to help people and support people. Because it is a new station, there is new access barriers. They're not new in the industry or across UK or Europe, but they're certainly new to us, and ticket vending machines, etc. And we want people to get familiar with those. So I would just encourage Janet to come back to us again, engage with us at the customer service desk, and we'll try to support her going forward. You know, we have an increase of over 600,000 passengers using the station over the first 3 months of it being open. So obviously it is having a big benefit in terms of people using public transport, but we recognise it's a change. And sometimes people don't like change, and we need to try and support them through that.
How do those stats compare? Can you give us a sort of percentage just to get that 600,000 figure into a bit of context?
Off the top of my head, Mark, no.
No, but you know, are you up roughly 10%? Or, I mean, obviously COVID and the pandemic skewed some of the statistics here. But I mean, you would say this, wouldn't you? But you're happy with the levels of use, are you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Mark. I mean, you know, to give you one example, the enterprise service is up around 50%, for example, since we put in the hourly service in terms of passenger numbers. So that's a significant increase. You know, we've increased the frequency on the ported down line, and that's put additional capacity in. So we're starting to see that capacity being used as well. And we have plans for the future, Mark. This station is not just about, you know, what we do, you know, this week or next week or this year. It's about, you know, the next 10, 20, 30 years. And we certainly have plans to grow capacity on our rail network and on our bus network. We are preparing appraisals now to increase our fleet on the railway. We've a procurement already underway to increase our enterprise fleet as well and our bus network. So this is about creating a key constraint in our network, removing that constraint and now starting to build out from that.
Speaking of trains to Dublin, I have a text in front of me. Condition 5 of the planning permission for Belfast Transport Hub says there shall be no more than 8 daily Belfast to Dublin train services each way into the approved development, 16 in total. The texter says they last year increased this to hourly. Is that not another breach of planning permission?
Well, again, that's something you would have to ask of DFI Planning. We have provided all the information required to meet that condition. And DFI Planning, as I understand it, are again reviewing that and working through that.
That sounds like, yes, you have breached that condition.
Again, this is a very complex project, Mark, and there's lots of different phases and lots of different stages that have to be worked through. It is something that you would really have to ask DFI Planning. You know, we're not aware of any enforcement, Mark, so that's something you'd have to engage with DFI Planning on.
Chris, if I put up a greenhouse and the local council said to me, you have no planning permission for that, and I said, well, no, go and ask yourselves the question whether I had the planning permission or not. Is it not your responsibility to answer that question?
Well, it's about the complexity of the different phases. That's if you know the example you've given is a very simple example, but this project has lots of different complex phases, and each of those has different conditions to do with them. It's not just about the enterprise, but it's how it links to other phases of the construction as well. As I said, we've met the conditions associated with the enterprise. But there are other phases which obviously DFI want to work through, and that's something for them to consider.
I'm not sure it is that complex. It says 16 in total, and according to this texter, and we can check this, you have more than 16 in total every day.
But the conditions are very complexly linked together, Mark, and it's how that linkage happens is what's important.
Let me give you a chance to talk about the big picture then. You know, me asking you what was about 13 negative questions already, people phoning into this programme, people going onto social media. Are you getting a bit fed up with all of the criticism? What are we failing to see here?
Well, I think what we're failing to see is two things. One is that, you know, this is the largest integrated transport hub on the island of Ireland. It will cater for over 20 million passenger journeys, and the public realm associated with it will bring significant benefits in terms of connectivity, in terms of accessibility, and in terms of future-proofing the station and the site for future generations. And we've doubled the number of platforms, 17 to 26 bus stands, connectivity right across the island of Ireland. Mm. And I think it is recognised that this has been one of the most successful capital projects delivered in Northern Ireland in recent years and probably in a long time. And this is recognised also across the UK and Ireland. I suppose there's that saying, Mark, where you're often not recognised in your hometown. It feels a little bit like that at the minute. And I would like to just take the opportunity to thank the project team, to thank all our stakeholders who've worked with us on this project, and for all the work that they've done. I think large infrastructure projects do sometimes receive criticism and are very complex to deliver. Everyone understands that. People don't like change, so sometimes some of the criticism comes from just the fact that it's changed. But I certainly would like to put my thanks out to all everyone who's worked on this project and delivered an exceptionally good project. And, you know, hopefully in time, the people of Northern Ireland will also thank them. But that's, I suppose, what I think that's the big picture, Mark, you know.
Back to the little picture. Difficult question number 14. Page 3 of the Irish News. More than 10,000 cancelled TransLink Metro bus services over the past year. In fairness, if you read into the article, I think that equates to 1% of all services. But 10,000 cancelled Metro bus services. Your reaction to that?
So, Mark, as you said, that, you know, we deliver 13,000 services every day. You know, that means that 99%+ of our services are operated. You know, less than 1%, you know, when you take all of our services into account, benchmarks extremely well across the industry. And there are lots of reasons for the cancellations. Sometimes they're related to weather. Obviously, you include some cancellations related to storm weather as well. There can be mechanical issues. Yes, we have to deal with those too. There can be just sometimes we're regulating the timetable to manage headways on the timetable as well. So there are lots of reasons for doing that. But, you know, that metric is benchmarks really well. And of course, anytime we have a cancellation, you know, we're disappointed. It's not something we want to do. But there are sometimes genuine reasons why it's necessary.
And finally, my friend Norma. I don't know if you saw the picture of us together on Bedford Street, Chris. Have a listen to this. This is what Norma wants.
We want to know why or why we're getting that bus stop back again and have a shelter and all when it's raining. There's nothing here and I don't think they're ever going to have it.
The bus shelter she wants to see should happen on Bedford Street. That's where she wants it. Or, Chris, we're giving you another option. If you can't deliver that, because I think it might be quite close to a listed building, can she have her old bus shelter back to get down the Lisburn Road from Donegal Square East? What would you say to Norma?
So, I would say to Norma, of course, that was always a temporary arrangement, particularly when the work was happening on Great Victoria Street and on the junction at Fisherwork Place. We did look at a shelter going in there, but as you said, it's close to a listed building and it wasn't approved by planning. So we are reviewing how long we need to stay there for and perhaps moving the services back to Donegal Square East. And we hope to announce something of that within the next couple of weeks.
Oh, she might be going home to her favourite bus stop beside the City Hall?
She might be, Mark. That's what we're reviewing at the minute to see is now the right time to do that.
Well, do you know the chief executive who could actually make it happen for Norma? Anybody got a number for him?
Well, I think we have to consider, you know, is that the right thing to do in terms of the punctuality and reliability of the service? But Norm is right. You know, if we don't do that, we do have to provide some better provision on Bedford Street.
And finally, Janet. Back to my offer to Janet. I'm going to ring her again, Chris. I'm going to say, please give Grand Central another chance. I'll buy her the coffee. I'll buy her a bun. Would you come and join us?
I will come and join you, Mark, and meet with Janet. Absolutely happy to do that.
Okay, the offer is there. Chris Conway, thanks very much indeed. Anything else we need to know from you before we go? I mean, I should ask you about the big picture. Anecdotally, and a couple of taxi drivers have disagreed with us, anecdotally, the traffic doesn't seem so bad now that Christmas is out of the way. Have you any stats to show that? Have you any good news for us?
Well, you know, I would say, Mark, you know, part of our responsibility is to put a sustainable transport plan in place to encourage more people to use public transport, particularly while the works are going on. And certainly we can see there are benefits from that. You know, leaving aside some of the issues on the build up to Christmas, we can see now that passenger numbers are continuing to utilize park and rides, for example. Park and ride usage is up about 20%. We can see, obviously, the usage that I've talked about in terms of the station itself and on terms of the railway. So we do think that's having a benefit, and that's having a benefit to traffic as well in the city.
And the big benefit, of course, from your perspective, would be once you're able to get the Boyne Bridge down. And just finally, to return to that, you don't have a date.
Well, you know, I think it is in everyone's interest now to move ahead with the dismantling of the bridge and to get the road opened again. We would like to see that review happen as quickly as possible so that we can then get on with the that work. And as I said to you, we intend to look at the programme review and see what we can do to absorb any delays that have happened recently and hope to be able, once we've done that, be able to confirm to people when the road can open again and when we can get things moving. But also the huge benefits for business as well, and we want business to benefit from that and communities to benefit from the new public realm.
Chris, thanks for coming on. You took it all in the chin, and you had a bit of good news, it seems, there from TransLink in terms of Norma. The offer is there to Janet. That's Chris Conway, TransLink Chief Executive, giving us the very latest. I think we touched on 15 different issues. What's on your mind? The phone lines have lit up after that interview with TransLink. Claire is the first caller. Morning, Claire.
Good morning, Mark.
Did you get any answers there that are going to help you?
No, not really. I'll tell you my experience, Mark. I live up on the Four Winds in Laura Grove, and I was getting into town in November going to a concert, and I was meeting a friend for dinner in town at a quarter to six, and I thought, I'll go in early just in case. So I stood at the Laura Grove bus stop at 20 past four, and I thought, well, this should give me plenty of time to get in and get a bite to eat with my friend before going to the concert. And waited and waited, and no bus came. About 45 minutes later, a bus arrived with a few passengers, and it said what's cool on it was nowhere near us.
Oh, Claire.
But yeah, dropped a few passengers off, closed the door, drove on. I continued to wait. A few other people arrived, and they were going to the concert too, and they left and said they're going to get a taxi. Life problem, I've waited this length, I'm going to continue to wait.
Oh.
So then an hour later, Mark, a bus came along and dropped a few passengers off and put a wee sign up saying not in service. So I went over and knocked the door and actually begged him to get on. I said, listen, I've been waiting here for over an hour. And he said, right. He said, well, I'm doing no drop-off apart from the city centre. And I said, that's fine. That's where I want to go.
So
Mark, he took me into the city centre, but the whole way down Newton Park, the Ormer Road, lots of passengers waiting.
Oh,
and I just felt so bad. I was the only person on this bus.
Did you get to your concert, Claire? Did you get to your concert?
Oh, yes, I got to my concert. Yeah. And a similar thing happened about a few weeks later, Mark. We're waited, and the same thing happened.
Yeah.
Out of service, buses when the event arrived wouldn't let you on. Mm-hmm. It's just abysmal up here. It's really bad.
I have heard. Yeah. I have a good friend who lives that direction as well. It has been an issue. Chris Conway, I know, and his team are going to keep listening. So they will note that, Claire. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you.
Listen, have a good weekend. David, what's your issue?
Good morning, Mark. My issue is with Chris there. This time next year, he'll be trying to bamboozle us with these fantastic figures that the passenger numbers travelling by train have increased dramatically. My fear will be, just to give you an example, my wife and I could have boarded a train in Lisburn and gone to Bangor. That was one journey. Now we have to get off at Grand Central and change trains.
Yeah,
They'll count that as two.
Yeah, so I've heard a bit of that, David. Yeah, it's not a great line, and a lot of people have made that point. I think it affects some school children as well, that maybe schools in South Belfast, they have to change trains when they come in the morning as well. I suppose it swings and roundabouts. You can't make an omelette without breaking a few eggs. I keep saying that. David, sorry, it's not a great line. Let's go to John in Belfast.
Hello.
John.
Hello.
Hit me with your point.
Well, the query I would like to ask of Chris is, why do the heaters not work on the trains and the buses? My wife and I are frequent travellers up to Londonderry, Dublin, and the trains and the buses are absolutely freezing, especially during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're never on. They never seem to be on. And I think it's ludicrous when they're, encouraging people to use public transport, but it's extremely uncomfortable.
You don't need heater at the moment. Barra sorted the weather for us. It's double digits all week.
Oh, aye, but if you're on public transport...
Yeah, fair point.
It's colder on them than it is outside.
Yeah. Is it maybe just the bus you get?
No. It's not just from one particular bus, because, as I say, we use all of the services. You know, we would get the bus down to Inniskillen or the bus up to Londonderry, or we get the train up to Londonderry or down to Dublin. And they're always freezing.
All right.
Always. There's an old saying, you get hang beef in these carriages. You know, and...
That's tickled me.
Why is it that issue not being addressed? Because loads of customers and passengers have complained along with us. I think one of the MEPs from Londonderry has raised the same question.
Yes.
I don't know where he got any response or not.
Do you know, I love a good old expression like that. You get hang beef. Don't do it though, John. Health and safety and all that. You've cheered me up this Friday morning. Marion's in Bangor. Morning, Marion.
Hello, good morning, Mark. I would like to ask the TransLink gentleman why there are no public toilets at the train side of the new station. When you get off the train, you have to come out through the barrier, walk to the far end of the station where the buses are, and that's where the toilets are. And if you have to get another train, you have to come back through the barriers again. When I inquired at the desk, I was told there are toilets on the train. And I'm sure if you've used toilets on the train, number one, if somebody's older, the train's a bit wobbly, so they maybe can't make it very well to the toilets. And the toilets themselves are sometimes disgusting. So I thought after all the money they've spent, they don't put any public toilets on the train side of the new Grand Central.
Marion, I've noticed that. It is a bit of a jaunt, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Not that easy to find. I'm sure there are signposts there. Would it be 3 or 4 minutes? Maybe that's an exaggeration. But certainly the toilets aren't
easily.
Obvious.
Yeah, I think easily.
Depends on how fast you walk or how urgently you need to go.
But I just thought when they spent all that money, I was told that there's going to be toilets upstairs in the new part.
Oh, there are already.
Beside the pub. But I mean, again, it's that doesn't help you. If you're getting off one train at the train side and wanting to get on another train at the train side, that you have to go out through the barrier and hoof it the whole way up to the other side of the station, maybe with a lot of luggage.
Marion, I think that's constructive criticism. What do you think of the station, though, as a whole?
Oh, no, I mean, I've used it many a time. I'm very happy with it, and getting tickets and everything, no problem. The staff are always very pleasant. I would also complain that gentleman who said about the train now, from Bangor, you can't get a through train now to Portadown, which is annoying that you have to get off. To me, I don't really see why you have to do that, but that's progress, isn't it?
That's progress, yes. We don't like change. Marion, have a good weekend.
The station itself is very nice, I must say.
There we are. Mark's out of 10.
Okay, Mark.
Mark's out of 10 for the station, Marion.
Mark's out of 10. For the station, I'd probably maybe give it an 8.
An 8. There we are.
Maybe higher if they got public toilets put in the train side.
Do you know what? They're listening. You never know what might happen. The station isn't completed yet. You never know. We'll call them the Marion Lose. If we ever get them. The Marion and Mark Lose.
I can come and open them.
You can. It'll cost them a few quid, though, to spend a penny. Oh, what have we started? Marion, all the best. Thanks to you in Bangor. Where are we going to go now? We're going to go to Lurgan. We're going to go to Joel. Joel, do you want to talk about the level crossing in Lurgan, or do you want to talk about something else?
Well, I'll talk about the level crossing, Mark. I think everybody's forgot about Lurgan, to be honest with you. We have got 3 level crossings in Lurgan, the 3 main arterial routes in and out of the town. And with the new express train put on the hour, they're closing every 18 minutes from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. at night. Now, every 18 minutes, and they can be closed up till 8 minutes.
Joel, just to explain to our listeners, and I'm sure most people know Lurgan, so there's a level crossing right in the middle of the town. For traffic coming into the town, traffic coming out of the town, it's the main route to the motorway, so it's a busy, busy road. Outside Belfast, it's probably one of the busiest roads in our provincial towns. And you're telling us the new stat is it's closed temporarily to allow a train to go past, what did you say, every 18 minutes?
Every 18 minutes, yep. So it closed with on the express train as well. So I'll give you an example. Yesterday evening on the way home, I was stopped at the railway gates. There was an ambulance came with the blue lights on. It had to sit at the level crossings for 7 minutes before the crossings opened to head on. Now, God knows, you know, they're talking about the NHS, the ambulance service, the times, well, in Lurgan.
So that's at William Street, am I right, Joe?
Yes, that's at William Street, Mark, yes.
What's the solution here? Because, you know, a lot of people are using it. The stats show it. It's very popular, that route. We're quite a small island, and it's about time we were better connected between the two biggest cities.
Well, they were talking years ago about building a flyover over the thing. So I kind of thought, well, they're taking down the Boyne Bridge. Why not ship it to Lurgan and build it there? You know?
See, I'm laughing. No, I don't think you could actually do that. Well, maybe
I
you
know
could.
You can't. I know you know you couldn't do it. If they can knock one down, they can surely build another one.
Yeah, yeah. You there know? Are a lot of houses around there, though, from memory.
There is, yep. Mm-hmm. Like you say, it's great access to everywhere. Yes, the train station's brilliant for people going to work and stuff. But the traffic problem in Lurgan is chaos. It now takes, for a 5 minute journey, it would take you about 25 minutes.
Yeah, well, you got to build that in. Joel, thank you. I should have asked Chris Conway about that. Apologies. Mary. God bless you, Mary, in Dunmurry. I don't think anyone has phoned from Dunmurry, but you've broken my duck during my 2 weeks on the programme. Thank you, Mary. What's your point?
Yeah, I'm just wondering why they don't print, TransLink don't print timetables anymore. I know there's online, but I can't do online. You know, I'm in my 70s, and there are other people like me as well. You know, and then you don't know what time... You know, the trains and the buses are going. Plus, at the, you know, where the timetables are, where you get the bus at the bus shelter, they have rearranged them. It seems so stupid to me. They put the times at the, you know, the buses are going into Belfast, way up high. You know, they've done that recently, and I can't, you know, it's above my eye level. The bus that I need is going, you know.
Mary, you've been very brave. You've been very brave. You've picked up the phone, as I've been telling everybody. TransLink are listening. Think about it and let me know. You can let me know now. What would you like TransLink to do? If they could do one thing to help you, what would it be, Mary?
To print timetables again for the buses and trains. Mm-hmm. And, you know... rearrange the times of the rotas.
Okay.
Or down so more, know, that I can see them at me. Well, I have to ask the young fellas, they're about a bit higher than
Mary,
me, to tell me what time the bus is going into Belfast.
Mary, I'm with you. I'm with you in terms of that. And if they are going to print more timetables, and I know there are environmental issues there, TransLink, please put them in large font for people of a certain age like me. Final call on this for the moment, because we've got a very important health story that we alluded to at the start of the programme. We want to bring you that in a minute or two, but I have to hear from James first. James, what's your point?
Good morning, Mark. I just wanted to bring up a subject. I was at a meeting on Wednesday night there on parking in Dalgety. And Dalgety is a nice wee town. I've been here nearly all my life and stuff. The town is getting so congested with traffic. The shopkeepers and everything down here are struggling to keep the shops open because all the trade is going to Malaise, Ballywalter, Bangor, Newton Arch. And, you know, the parking has got terrible. You can't park anywhere, and the parking spaces are all bunged up with other people.
So, better parking.
Yes, better parking. Now, the council have come up with an idea of making signs to where the parkings are in Dalgety, but they're wasting that money on it, but they won't put the money into a service like Google and make a website for tourists to come to Dalgety so they know where the car park spaces are in Dalgety.
Right. Gotcha, James. Right, we'll note that one down as well. We're in a bit of a hurry because I want to get to Robert. Robert's been waiting for ages. Thanks, James. Have a good weekend.
Thank you for your time, Mark. Thank you.
Good morning. You're absolutely right. First point, buses to to Newcastle down Patrick still do not run out of Grand Central Station. They run off streets at the back of the City Hall, causing traffic delays and no facilities for seating, no heating, no inclement weather. You're standing on the street and all of that business. And secondly, in GC, there, you can't buy a newspaper. A can
GC?
Of Coke.
What's GC?
Grand Central. Everybody calls it GC. I'm amazed at you.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. They call it GC. They know what it is, right? Grand Central, right? They call it on their timetables GC, so everybody's calling it GC, including Mr. Noland, by the way. Anyhow, apart from that interruption, you can't buy the things that I've outlined on the with all these people that are supposed to be passing through it. You'd think it would be a mecca for someone to sell those products, which is known as CTN, Confectioner, Newsagents and Tobacconists. And also, they spent a lot of money at Ballymartin, which is at Temple Patrick, and you can't board a bus there to go to the Belfast International Airport because it is, quote, forbidden. But they don't tell you forbidden by who.
Robert, are you saying you can't buy a newspaper at GC?
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And we were there recently, unfortunately. We had an appointment in that area, and we normally get on in Queen Street. But anyhow, my wife wanted a paper, so we went. It was 9 or 10 yellow high-vis jackets standing about, right, all having a chat to themselves, right? They didn't seem to be doing anything, but obviously they need to be paid, and they're paid by TransLink, of course, who's paid by the taxpayer, and they didn't produce it. But anyhow, we checked with them, and they said, no, there is no newspapers here, there is no cans of Coke, there is no hot sausage rolls, there is no chocolate for your children, etc., etc. I already had five. But they can, by the way, have a big, big bar selling alcohol to people who are journeying on buses to airlines, which is causing a big problem with people being...
Robert, there's a Marks and Spencer there. There's a Marks and Spencer there. So you can't get a drink. You can't get something to eat and drink. And there are two cafes.
Stop. Hold on. If you can mortgage the house, yes. But for children who want a bar of chocolate, Mars, Aero, that sort of thing, right? And by the way, as a matter of interest, in Marks and Spencer's, I investigated this. I was 50 years in sales marketing, so I know what I'm about in that context.
Okay.
And can I also tell you that they don't have any tills manned by human beings?
Well, Marks and Spencer aren't here to defend themselves. Robert, you have your point, but just to put it on the record, there is that local store, or international or national store there available. There's a bar and there are two cafes and there are two sets of toilets, but none right at the train station. The time is exactly 10 to 10 this Friday morning. And this is a story that we've been working on all week, really, because a nurse right at the heart of our health crisis contacted us. They wanted to let us know what they saw, but they didn't want us to reveal their identity. So we had to double check that what they were saying was, as far as we could verify, actually happening. And of course, we can't get 100% proof. It's only their word for it. But we checked out their credentials and they seemed to add up. So with that health warning, we're now going to hear from a nurse who says they have seen with their own eyes patients dying who may have survived in one of our hospitals if they had been treated earlier. That is a serious accusation, but as we know, a number of health professionals have told the BBC, they've warned us in recent days, that unnecessary deaths will happen or might happen. So this nurse reached out to the Nolan Show and said, albeit in, thank God, only a small number of cases, they claim they saw it happen. They wanted to share their frustration about the pressures that they have witnessed in the system. As I say, they want to remain anonymous. You will hear their words now, voiced by a member of the Nolan team. I began by asking them to tell me more about exactly what they do and what they've seen.
So I'm a nurse and I work within one of the acute hospitals here in Northern Ireland. I've seen obviously significant pressures that have been well documented, but I've also seen and felt obviously the frustration of senior leaders and officials to act on this. And this is just within talking to colleagues of mine. It's the under-preparedness. It's just shocking. There's no preparation for this year, and every year it gets worse. And this year it's gotten worse again, more than last year. But it's lack of preparedness. It really is. It's just frustrating. And probably over the Christmas period, really, since the middle of December, I've seen at least two people, probably a third, die unnecessarily. And that is due to a delay in receiving care. And that delay is due to the pressures that the health service is under. And ultimately, two to three people have lost their lives. And now that's just in the hospital that I'm aware of. That's only in the shifts that I've been working and that I'm aware of. I just think that it's disgusting. And I really think that until you're there and you see it firsthand and you witness it firsthand and you know what really... The families probably don't know the truth. You know, the families probably don't know the truth. And it's not that we are lying to them. It's just that the situation has deteriorated so rapidly, so quickly, because there has not been the help there that should be there. And again, this is due to the underpreparedness of the government and the health service.
That's a very, very serious charge, you saying that patients died who may otherwise have lived if they had more care. Have you any evidence for that?
The evidence I've seen with my own eyes, I suppose, really, it's experience. It goes on experience. And you know that if a patient has access to better oxygenation, gone on antibiotics quicker, have been monitored closely, we know how closely you can see with a patient charge how often that they have been monitored. And you've been looking at their observations and things, and through looking at that, you can see that staff obviously haven't. They haven't had that. They obviously haven't had the time to give this patient proper care that they should be getting.
So you're talking about patients here who you have seen when they've been admitted, and your own opinion was, you know, they're going to be all right, but they ended up dying.
Yeah, well, not necessarily always that they're going to be all right. Obviously, sometimes a very aggressive form of treatment, whether that be through oxygen therapy, whether that be through antibiotics. But a lot of the time, these things, there's often a delay in getting these things to it ultimately affecting the care. And whereas people may have been in hospital then for 2 weeks, you find it maybe dying within 24 to 48 hours. They're not getting that chance to try and survive within 2 weeks. You know, people, they deteriorate really rapidly, especially with regards to oxygenation, that sort of thing. So yeah, it goes on basically again that they're not getting treated quickly enough. They're not getting access to medications, oxygen, life-saving support that they do need.
As I say, that's such a serious charge. How can we believe you?
Well, you can believe me. I'm putting myself out there. Obviously, by contacting the Nolan Show, I wouldn't do that if I wasn't frustrated. The last patient that I seen this happen to was last week, and that was an awfully hard shift. And it happened at the end of an awfully hard shift. And it was just so frustrating and so annoying. I wouldn't put myself out there if I didn't think that, you know, I didn't think that people would believe me. Yes, there are people who wouldn't believe me, but until you see it firsthand, and like thousands of people who have been in the A&E, you know, over the last few weeks will tell you that, you know, the waits in A&E, those delays to get treatment is absolutely shocking. And while I don't expect people to be seen and treated within a few hours, it can be so much quicker. Should be so much quicker than it currently is.
And is it a resources issue? Is it a numbers issue? Is it a management issue? What would improve the situation? More people, better organisation, or do you think it is impossible to fix?
I don't think it's impossible to fix. I think every year we put the sticking plaster sort of effect over it. And a lot of the time, it's staffing issues. Staff have had enough. Staff are under a lot of stress. And again, it comes back to that under-preparedness.
What the listeners are hearing is not your real voice, but I can hear your real voice. Why aren't you prepared just to tell us who you are? You have nothing to hide. Just put it out there. You saw what you saw and you want to tell everybody about it.
I have a duty of care, obviously, to my patients who I've seen. And if I obviously give my name and where I work, people will be able to identify that. And obviously from that, there may be issues arise from the patients who may have passed away. However, I am willing to meet my senior management if they want to listen to some basic ideas which I have, which my colleagues have, which could try to help the situation or even try to help in the future. Next year, you know, obviously the issue I'm bringing is very serious here. Bringing this serious issue forward, bringing it to the press, my employers would not be happy that this is coming out.
You're telling me about the issues, about what you have seen with your own eyes. Have you written them down? Have you told management verbally and in written form what you've seen?
Not as yet. No, I haven't. The reason, well, a few reasons for that. One of them is that I don't really feel that they listen to you. They may wish to try and act on this again. It puts me forward then as a whistleblower, puts me forward as someone who's supposed to be saying what's really going on. I haven't approached them as yet. I'm still thinking, obviously thinking that over. But this is my first sort of port of call to say that after frustration over the past couple of weeks, because I feel as though that it needs highlighted to the public. It's just not acceptable. It's just not acceptable at all. And there are so many little things that could have been done, which could have been done, you know, that preparedness which I'm talking about, and it's just so frustrating. It's really, really frustrating.
Well, those are very serious allegations that you heard there, very disturbing allegations. In response, we now have a statement from the Department of Health to the Nolan Show. They said, the Health Minister and the Department are deeply concerned about the impact on patients and staff from the severe pressure on services. This is not the standard of care anyone wants to be providing. The demand for care is significantly in excess of the current capacity of the system to provide it. This inevitably brings potential for increased risk for patients. And all too often, managing this risk involves finding the least worst options for care in the circumstances. And finally, they add, the report published this week by the Royal College of Nursing shows that similar challenges are being faced in emergency departments right across the UK. The Health Minister, Mike Nesbitt, was on the programme yesterday. It's still there on BBC Sounds. Listen to it if you have the time. It's a no-holds-barred interview, and he addresses some of those issues. Now to an important story in local sport. The Irish rugby authorities in Dublin and Belfast don't want to do any interviews about it, but I can tell you something very significant has happened within rugby here in recent weeks behind the scenes. We know what happened, and we're going to tell you what we can broadcast. One of their full-time referees, Chris Busby from Ulster, has told his bosses he's retiring from the job at the end of the season. He's only 38 years of age. He's an international referee. He took charge of the recent game between Scotland and Australia at Murrayfield, and he was the man in the middle at the Kingspan at last year's Schools Cup final.
The referee, incidentally, is Chris Busby, former captain of the Ballyclare High School First 15, and now well established at the highest levels,
but not for much longer. The news actually broke elsewhere last week that he's had enough. And one of the reasons is the abuse that refs have to take these days. It's not the only reason for his decision. I need to make that clear. But it is one of them, and it's important because it comes not long after a high-profile Irish international rugby player, Mack Hansen, criticised him, Chris Busby, publicly, and in very colourful terms. It came after the recent game between Leinster and Mack Hansen's team, Connacht.
I feel like we get this every week. We never get any calls. I don't know if you can hear the frustration in my voice because it's starting to get to a point where it's honestly and it's starting to get really frustrating for us. It just needs to be said, like, it's really starting to get to us, like, as a team.
He said a lot more too. That was just before Christmas. Last week, Mack Hansen was handed a 3-game ban and he did issue a statement apologising to Chris Busby and all of the other match officials. But some believe he was treated leniently. And if it had been the other way around, can you imagine a ref criticising a high-profile player? Well, it would have been a very different story, wouldn't it? But refs don't do that. So why is criticising them now seen by many people as okay? Free speech. Do we all? And I include me in this. Need to take a closer look at ourselves. Fans, as well as those high-profile players and coaches in sport, about what we all say about the officials. Now, we're going to have a wider discussion about this in the next 20 minutes or so. And we're going to include, don't worry, other sports too, like football and the GAA. And as we know, in the Irish League, some football managers don't hold back.
We've two penalty shouts here, which are stonewall penalties for me. Stonewall penalties. How the referee doesn't see those and give those is beyond me. The game was too big for him, and the amount of stupid yellow cards issued and incompetence around decision making was just frightening for me.
How many times have you heard a manager say that? Many times have you said that? Well, is it on, really? Well, more of that to come. But first, let's hear from the former international rugby referee, Owen Doyle. He's one of the finest refs which Ireland has ever produced. And after he hung up his whistle in the mid-1990s after, I think it was 17 international matches, he became director of referees at the IRFU, that's the Irish Rugby Football Union. He's now retired from that role and he's free to speak his mind. Wait for this. He believes the authorities at the URC, that's the United Rugby Championship, should have dealt with Mack Hansen more quickly than they did. Owen Doyle also says he has an awful lot of sympathy for our local referee in Ulster and Ireland, Chris Busby.
He is the only person who comes out of this sorry, sad shambles with his dignity and pride intact. It's an indictment on the rest of them, people who are involved in this. From the very beginning, when Mack Hansen started to speak, his coach, Peter Wilkins, was sitting beside him and he should have put his hand across and touched his arm and said, Mack, this isn't the place. That's the first thing that went wrong. The next thing that went wrong is URC decided they didn't need to hold a hearing immediately. Now, if Hansen had been sent off, that hearing would have been on Tuesday and that would have been dealt with quickly. And I'm sure Chris Busby would have been happy with the outcome. But they let it ramble on. And Hansen actually went out to play the following Saturday. So with no public announcement from anybody, including the IRFU, including the referee department, to simply say, we support our referee, but we're not going to affect the hearing. We'll wait for the outcome. Nobody said a thing. So there's poor Chris Busby wondering, is this going to be heard at all? I mean, I was suspecting they were just going to let the thing go, but they luckily didn't. And, you know, when we hear respect and integrity being trotted out by the IRFU whenever it suits them, and then not at all when it doesn't suit them. I mean, we all remember the women. They got so much respect and integrity that they decided the only thing they could do was write to the government. And then, of course, they got what they were looking for. So the IRFU doesn't have a great record in this, I'm afraid. And, of course, the other point I made in the Irish Times the other day was that they're both employed by the same company. And I don't know how that company can let one employee put out a big diatribe against another in public. The whole thing just doesn't stack up for me.
The IRFU may say, Owen Doyle, that the URC has taken action, though.
That's what they will say, but they should not be happy with the action that's been taken. That's my point. If they throw on another week onto Hansen's suspension, yes, he'd miss the English game, but is he actually bigger than the game? They obviously really want him to be on the pitch, and they don't care about this other issue enough to say we're adding on, for all the reasons that I've outlined just now, that we're adding on another week.
You mentioned your article in the Irish Times on Tuesday, and you did mention, and you've alluded to this, Owen, about the possibility of further action by the IRFU against Mark Hansen. Do you think that might still happen?
Well, if it hasn't happened by now, I think it's most unlikely.
And your article, and you've said it in this interview, is defending Chris Busby. He hasn't said anything, but I don't think he has contradicted any of the speculation that he's giving up and giving up for good. I think when his contract with the IRFU runs out at the end of this season. What are the repercussions on referees in Ireland, north and south, in terms of recruitment and retention?
Well, I think that's huge, because the first thing you do when you're thinking of taking up the whistle, you look at all these issues.
Is it getting worse, the abuse of referees, in your opinion?
Well, yes, and the IRFU has stated that it's getting worse. They're getting more examples of it. And the worst place is at schools, age grade. It's not necessarily just schools. Age grade, and that's up to 18 years of age. And I've seen and watched parents go absolutely mad on the touchline, screaming at the match official. It's not just the dads either. It's a society problem as well, isn't it, Mark? You know, society doesn't have respect for anybody or anything. And the problem that rugby has in particular, it's very complicated. You can see decisions, yeah, it went that way, but that could have gone the other way. And it was never a sport designed to be played for money. And the only thing that matters now is getting a W in the column after your match. Nothing else matters. And that's also led, in my view, to more of the violence on the pitch.
Two more things, Owen Doyle. In terms of sport generally, is there anything it can do to counteract this creeping lack of respect at all levels?
Well, I think there's an education thing involved here as well, that clubs in all sports should educate and spend time getting that message through to their players, through to their club members. And you'll always have somebody who will shout at the referee coming off the pitch. But that's not, everybody accepts that. Referees are not too precious about themselves. They generally have to have a pretty thick skin. But it is a problem. And if we look at the GAA, I mean, their problem is three or four times as bad as rugby's is. But we don't want to go down that road. And that is up to the governing body as well, to stand 100% behind the match officials. And I don't think they've done it in this instance.
I'm sure, just finally, a bit of nostalgia. Things weren't perfect back in your day either, were they?
Well, do you know, winning wasn't everything. For example, I refereed my first international match in Cardiff. And Bob Norster came off the pitch, put his arm around me as we walked off, and he said, look, for your first one, that wasn't bad. Look forward to having a drink. He said, I thought we got it down there in the end. And I said, well, it was very tight, but I said, I didn't see it as a try. And he said, look, fair enough, no issue. And that was that. Can you imagine if Chris Busby had decided to be interviewed and goes out and castigates the players and their performances? It's just not going to happen, of course. But the IRFU would take immediate action against the match official.
Well, there you have it. That's Owen Doyle's view. We asked the IRFU, that of course is the Irish Rugby Football Union, who are in charge of rugby on the island, about this call for them to take further action. Well, let me read you their statement. A spokesperson said, we would like to clarify that the matter surrounding Mark Hansen's comments and subsequent actions was handled by the United Rugby Championship, the URC, not the IRFU. In terms of the IRFU, they say they fully respect the decision that was reached after a URC disciplinary hearing, and they have no further comment on the process. They say that the URC, as the relevant competition body, is responsible for managing such issues, and the union trusts their handling of the situation. Well, let's get an insight into what it's like for referees in other sports. We'll talk about the GAA shortly. But first, let's talk about football, local football, the Irish Premiership. One of the referees is on the line. Stephen Gregg, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
You've probably got a big match tomorrow. You've got a cup final next week. We don't want to talk about specific players or fans or managers. We're not going to do any of that. But tell us about how much abuse you get on and off the pitch.
It varies at times. I've had situations before. I had a high-profile game five or six years ago. One of the Celta supporters didn't agree with it, didn't like the red card. Later on that night when I got home, my social media account was shared amongst supporters forums. So I had to take action in terms of trying to untag myself and changing the profile name. So it's gone to that sort of stage where it was easy for fans just to find your name. So I start sending you direct messages. Again, via the social media accounts as well. So I'm not the only one in that situation. All the referees have had to do the same. It's not great, but it is what it is.
How does it affect you personally and your family, Stephen?
It does affect them, certainly. I've refereed now in the Premier League for coming up this ninth season, so really in the last 9-10 years. I've refereed 160 Premier League football matches. And to be honest, my kids, my wife, they've never been to one of them. They just think that they just don't like the abuse that's handed out to referees. It's not a good thing. It's difficult whenever they can't just go and see their dad referee a football game.
That's disappointing for you, Stephen. What about you have a couple of big matches coming up, but would you try it?
I think that I'm hoping that they will. I'm hoping that'll happen. I've sort of built up a certain level of resilience over the years. I think resilience is something that's definitely needed within refereeing. You've got to have a thick skin, as people would say. And there was an article, I think it was last week or week before, that caught my eye. It was like an online BBC article. And the headline was something about child mental health crisis and that a better resilience is the solution. And I sort of have a concern about, where are we getting the next referees from? Kids, I think there is a certain lack of resilience in kids nowadays. And again, that was evident from the nurse that was quoted in the article. And she talked about 20 years working as a school nurse. And 20 years ago, when she started off, it was more to do with kids, to do with injuries or physical health, asthma and things like that. Whereas now it's nearly predominantly mental health. And I do think that, supporters, coaches, parents, as was alluded in the previous one, parents are getting very vocal, certainly in the grassroots stage of football. And I think football refereeing could help out kids who are suffering from that type of resilience issues, and it could be a positive at some stage if the kids can actually get the referee games and
Okay, Steve, I want to bring in Brendan McGrew to talk about the GAA. Before I do, I want to try and end on a positive note. Have you any stories whereby, without naming them, a manager, a coach, or even a fan has said, "You know what? I overreacted there. I'm sorry."
I've had that on a couple of occasions. Certainly, even last year, there was a game where I missed a penalty in the game, and the manager was quite vocal on social, through the media directly after the game. And perhaps it's not always the best time for a manager just to go, maybe just immediately to the media. we do understand that the game is, you know, there's a level of, you know, emotion about the game. You can't take that out, but there has to be a level where they don't cross the boundaries either. And, you know, a number of weeks afterwards, we spoke about it and they apologised and we move on from that. Yeah. But again, it sort of took doing that.
And you end up with a bit of respect for people that, you know, when the dust settles and at sport, it is only a game. It isn't life and death. Stephen, stay with us. Brendan Mulgrew, commentator, GAA fan and coach, I think. I think you coach your kids' team. Is that right, Brendan?
Yes, Mark, that's right. Good morning.
Morning. What do you think about all of this?
It's a hot topic, Mark. And, you know, within GAA, you know, everyone gets carried away or gets caught up in the emotion of the game. And there's not a game goes by where the ref doesn't get shouted at or, you know, criticised on the pitch from players, from managers, and it happens from the sideline too. And the most important thing is that, you know, that it's left there and it's left at that, you know, but people do try and influence referees, players try and influence referees. But we have often looked upon rugby, you know, there's often chat amongst GAA fans to say, God, you know, our players need to be the way rugby players are, just take referee's decision and move on. And it's timely, Mark, we're having this conversation because there's a whole, tomorrow, this next weekend, heralds the introduction of a vast set of new rules for Gaelic football, designed to try and counter the negative direction the game has gone in recent years. But within the rules, one of the new rules now is that if anyone does give verbal abuse to the referee, the ball is moved up 50 metres. Not 13 metres, not 12 metres, as may have been the case in the past, 50 metres. That's a heck of a sanction against the team whose player gives grief to the referee. And from now on, only the captain of the team is empowered to question a decision or to engage with the referee. So it's going to be interesting to see how these new rules have an effect on the game. And that's top of the bottom, Mark. That's the big high-profile games at Croke Park. But that's the local club junior B games as well. It's right throughout the whole organisation. So we're actually there's steps being taken to try and remove and deal with criticism and abuse of referees because it shouldn't happen. It's not acceptable. These guys, they're volunteering their time. Without them, there's no games. So, you know, the GAA is taking that proactive step now to try and snap out abuse of referees.
Without them, there's no game. That's quote of the day from Brendan. Stephen, have you ever thought about walking away?
Not really, no. Well, there's certainly times when it's been more challenging than others. The criticism from supporters and thing, you know, and coaches and stuff, it can affect you. But what annoys me more sometimes is self analysis myself. If I walk off a game and I know in the back of my mind I've missed something here, missed a penalty, or missed a red card, it annoys me more that I've missed it. And in terms of it's affected my performance, you know, and it'll be a case of self-analysis. Why did I miss that? Was the angle of that I could see, was it not good? Could I improve that in the future? And trying to learn from it. So it's more annoying, you know, it's more critiquing myself.
Stephen,
is mostly what it is.
You're very humble. You're very humble. I'll give you another quote. The race is long, but in the end, it's only with yourself. It's other sports as well that are affected. We've had a caller, Ian Parsley. Ian, I know you from politics. I also know you from hockey.
Yes,
is that the same one? Are you the hockey umpire?
That's right, yes.
Are you about to out me as somebody that maybe has made a few comments?
Well, actually, I have to say, Mark, you're somebody who's... I was going to say there is a positive side to this as well, and you certainly have contributed to the positive side. I mean, firstly, obviously hockey is in line with other sports in many ways where... And I think what I would remind people is it only sometimes takes one comment or one sort of interaction which is unpleasant and you can drive somebody away from refereeing or umpiring. And that's, you know, extremely unfortunate to say the least. And I've known that to happen in a number of sports, not least in hockey. And we do have to consider, just as Stephen was saying with regard to football, where our next generation of umpires are coming from. And we have to be more considerate, perhaps, towards them. Hockey does have a 20-minute rule at the end where coaches, umpires are allowed to insist on 20 minutes before a coach speaks to them.
Oh, that's a good rule.
Which is perhaps a help.
So is that at the end of the game? Sorry to interrupt, Ian.
Yes,
that's at the end of the
right,
game.
Yeah.
I just want to bring Brendan in on that.
An umpire,
and
an umpire
Stephen,
can say, hold 20 minutes, please. Yeah.
So hockey might be ahead of the game. So that's at the end of the game. You have this threshold of, for 20 minutes, you're not allowed to speak to the umpire, not even to shake their hand.
You can if the umpire agrees to do it, but the umpire's allowed to say, just wait 20 minutes and I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. Yep.
Stephen, what do you think about that idea?
It's not a rule that we would have, but typically, you know, if a manager wants to speak to you after the game in the changing room, you usually tell them, could you see me in 10 or 15 minutes? Quite often, they'll maybe not come back because they've cooled off themselves, but it's given them 10 or 15 minutes to calm themselves and for it to actually be a proactive discussion at the end of the day. There's no point sending them straight in because it's going to end up a shouting match.
And what about GAA, Brendan?
Well, there's no set rule to that, Mark, but I must say, you know, the culture within GAA is that while referees do get criticised from sidelines and even from some players on the pitch, like at the end of the game, the vast, vast majority of the time it's a handshake, and I've even heard it said multiple times, you know, look, I got carried away there, look, sorry about that, I know you're doing your best. People do say that quite often to a ref after the game, and the ref will take that in good spirit, but, we have young kids playing our games, and they take their cue from what they see on the sideline and from what they see senior players doing in adult games. So if we're going to change the culture of criticising or abusing a referee, that does come from the adults around the pitch, supporters, coaches, parents, importantly, and adults that other kids see within their own club playing games. So so the GAA has taken this step to try and, you know, it's from top down, change the way we interact with referees, and I hope that in a year's time we can say, look, that's had the right effect and the atmosphere has changed.
And just finally to you, Stephen, Greg, I started this by saying, you know, maybe us as fans, even in our own little bit of banter within our WhatsApp groups. I mean, I'm a Man United fan. You want to see our WhatsApp group after the referee at Arsenal last Sunday. But I suppose the serious point is that, you know, everything starts with yourself. And do we even in our own little WhatsApp groups need to sort of think twice before putting in a knee-jerk reaction, Stephen?
Certainly. Even in terms of games, that, you know, it was fourth official last Tuesday night, and even there's comments on social media about you know, this and that about the referee, and you get one set of fans saying one thing and the other set are saying something completely different. Social media, you know, once you put something out there, it's always out there. People need to have you know, a better level of respect too, but they also just have to be wary of, you know, what they're saying, or, you know, what
absolutely
the effect can have on people as
respect.
Well,
respect, that's what it's all about. That's what the show's all about as well, hearing what you have to say. Some practical ideas there from Stephen, from Ian and from Brendan. Good luck in the cup final next week, Stephen. Thanks to everyone for listening. Holly Hamilton is in the hot seat next week. Connor Phillips is on now. I think they know each other. Thanks for your company. Have a good weekend.
Show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan.
Yoga is more than just exercise. It's the spiritual practice that millions swear by. And in 2017, Miranda, a university tutor from London, joins a yoga school that promises profound transformation.
It felt a really safe and welcoming space. After the yoga classes, I felt amazing.
But soon, that calm, welcoming atmosphere leads to something far darker, a journey that leads to allegations of grooming, trafficking and exploitation across international borders.
I don't have my passport, I don't have my phone, I don't have my bank cards, I have nothing.
The passport being taken, the being in a house and not feeling like they can leave.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are unveiled and hidden realities are exposed. In this new series, we're confronting the dark side of the wellness industry, where the hope of a spiritual breakthrough gives way to disturbing accusations.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
And it's like this, the secret that's there. I wanted to believe that, you know, that whatever they were doing, even if it seemed gross to me,
was for some spiritual reason that I couldn't yet understand.
Revealing the hidden secrets of a global yoga network.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this and to put my reputation and everything else on the line. I want truth and justice. And for other people to not be hurt, for things to be different in the future.
To bring it into the light and almost alchemize some of that evil stuff that went on and take back the power.
World of Secrets, Season 6, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.